Cha-ching. That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast for Friday, August 28th, episode 153. Today, a lot happening in China with the Chengdu Auto Show. Cars like the BYD Dahan taking people's breaths away. We'll get onto that later. Hyundai announcing 100 new and updated EVs and, more importantly, going EREVs for America. And EVgo CEO sits down with Tom to talk about charger reliability and their strategy for the future. I am your host, Martin Lee, from EV.news, or just EV News. If you want, under that, you've got EV News Daily, EV News China, and a bunch of other spin-off stuff as well. Go check out the podcast in your feed if you haven't done recently. Joining us today is the apodictic Mr. Tom Mologany, host of YouTube State of Charge, and of course EVChargingStations.com, where I blatantly steal half of my podcast material from and just rewrite it and say, so I read Tom did this. No, we also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of YouTube's Drive Electric with Dominic. Hopefully later today, we'd absolutely love to be joined by a special guest. We've invited him on. He is massively busy inside China right now. He's the producer and host of Inside China Auto. His name is Mark Rainford. He's an absolute legend in the terms of the videos that he makes. And hopefully we'll get him on this week. Fingers crossed. He is very busy with a motor show on right now, so we'll try and get him on the show. Right, let's get into it.
The Batteries Included podcast is sponsored by EVChargingStations.com. If you drive an electric vehicle or you're planning to, this site is packed with comprehensive charger reviews, detailed DC fast charging graphs, and the latest news from all of the fast charging networks. You'll find real-world testing, easy-to-understand comparison, and deep dives into how different electric vehicles actually charge. Before you buy an EV charger or plan your next road trip, make sure to bookmark EVChargingStations.com and make smarter charging decisions.
All right, let's get into the show this week. If you see Dom tippy-tapping on the keyboard, he's not ordering an Uber Eats or something for later. He's just chatting to Mark at the minute, who would try and get a signal on his device and talk China stuff a little bit later. If not, we'll get him on a different week. Don't worry about that. Now, this was huge news this week. I thought enormous news. Hyundai's 100-vehicle blitz. There's so much we could get into here. Hyundai are basically going to split their strategy, which kind of seems like a smart thing to do. In Europe, this was mainly about Hyundai Genesis, this presentation. In Europe, 41 new and updated EVs by 2030. They're going big on EVs in Europe because it buys you things like emissions credits, even super credits, and you sell one small EV and you can go sell a very profitable hybrid car, for instance. So that's the policy there. But in the US and North America, what they're doing is they're going down the road of EREVs, and we got the news that the first one goes on sale in early 2027. So that tells us, well, they're a long way down this path. You can't just announce it and then get a vehicle ready in 4 or 5 months. And so 58 new vehicles, new or updated vehicles in North America. 49 of them will be in Korea, 41 in Europe, 26 in India, 22 in China. The EREV push is all about the North American story. The first one is going to be the Santa Fe EREV, their first extended range EV. Launches in the first half of 2027. It's going to be built in the US. Obviously, that'll be Alabama, not the Georgia plant, but Alabama makes Santa Fe. And so they will sell it there with over 600 miles. This is not EPA range, by the way. 600 miles of range, 1,000 kilometers or so, with a battery, which they say is about half the size of an equivalent EV battery. Now, you know that, and we know that, but I think they were selling it generally to the room. We know that EREVs have smaller batteries, but saying that, there are some EREVs in China with 60, 70, 80 kilowatt hour packs that never touch the fossil juice that you put into it. But this really interesting split. Tom, we'll come straight to you for some reaction on this. When he got the news a couple of days ago or so on this. A split of strategy rather than a global strategy. Santa Fe, EREV, they didn't say it will never drive the wheels. They said it's great to have the convenience of an onboard generator, which tells me it's never going to drive the wheels. Some EREVs can, by the way, clutch onto the axle up at speed. But this one sounded like they didn't show a picture, like an exploded diagram of the drivetrain. But I think it sounded like it will only ever charge the battery. Tom, what was your reaction to this?
Well, I'm certainly not surprised, Martin. You know, it seems the United States is going to be the laggards when it comes to this transition to electrification. We were kind of bringing up the rear, slightly before the Trump administration gutted the, CAFE standards, and now automakers don't. There's no regulation. There's nothing in place to fine the automakers if they don't have, high corporate average fuel economy. So that was one of the things that was driving the automakers to say, look, we need to get these BEVs in the showrooms. We need to train our dealers. We need to have education on why you might want to consider this, because we need to sell them. And we don't need to anymore now. The automakers could sell whatever they want. They could sell an entire fleet of diesel vehicles, and it's fine. So that plays a big role in it. Education plays a big role in it, too. The funny thing is, Martin, the first EREV that really we remember was the Volt, right? Mm. And I remember back then how such a high percentage of people, at least the active people online, talked about how they never filled it with gas. They bragged about how, I'm at, 35,000 miles. I've only had to fill the tank three times. And, my answer to that was, that's great. The Volt's a great car, but you bought the wrong car. Like, you didn't need to be dragging around this gas generator for the last 36,000 miles if you don't use it. You would be just fine with a gas car. Now, obviously not all EREV owners are like that. There's many use cases where they really do work well. I would, say for people that need to drive very long distances, middle America, the pickup trucks, that need to tow hundreds and hundreds of miles at a time. But for most, say, homeowners, most people that live in residences where they can charge at home, it makes little to no sense other than to give people the comfort that, it's there if I need it, which I understand when you move into your first plug-in vehicle, a lot of people have that concern. I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of people over the years that, have that. Well, but what if I wish I just had it there in case I needed it. But then after a year or so, they realize I really didn't need it. They get the plug-in hybrid or EREV, whatever you want to call it. And then they're like, yeah, I really didn't need this. My next car will be a BEV. So it's a BEV on training wheels. I fully believe that most of the people that get into an EREV, maybe some of the people that wouldn't have, which if you're watching on YouTube now, the comment that we have posted up there brings more people into EVs. The people that maybe wouldn't have gotten one will get the EREV. After a year or so, they'll be like, yeah, I didn't need that gas generator. And then on the next car, they'll get one without it. So they play a role, Martin. I just think with better education, I think more people would realize that they don't need it. There's definitely use cases for it. So I wouldn't say, the whole thing's a dumb idea. Why are we doing this? There's use cases where BEVs just aren't the right tool for the job. But most people in most cases, I think, could live just fine with a BEV, especially now where we are today here in the U.S. market. The DC fast charging infrastructure has exploded, Martin. I mean, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of plugs being added every month, high-powered 350 to 400 kilowatt chargers, every single month, hundreds of them going into the ground. So, if this was 15 years ago, plug-in hybrids, EREVs made more sense. Today,
they make sense for a very small percentage of the population, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And, you know, EREVs have been a feature of the Chinese EV market for a couple of years now. Funnily enough, as 2026 goes on, the heat around EREVs is starting to come off a little bit. Maybe they'll find their natural place. A far better person to tell you about that is Mark Rainford. Welcome to the podcast. I don't know how good your signal's going to be because you are, well, just in Chengdu Auto Show fever. Mark, welcome along. Thanks for joining us.
Or not.
Or not. That might be the world's longest delay. Okay.
Can you hear us now?
You can hear us now.
Can you hear me now?
Are you there? Can you? Are we coming through loud and clear, Mark? This.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, there we go. We got a little bit, Mark. If you can hear us, we got. Thank you very much for having me. All right. Well, let's see how your signal goes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can now. We can now. There just may be the delay of all delays on this. So I'll
let's see if I can get this to work.
I'll ask a question and then I'll stop talking.
I can hear you guys. I can hear you fine.
Good.
I don't know if
we can
hear
you now. Yep. We got you so far. Me. All right. Yep. Okay. All right. So you've been at the Chengdu Auto Show. How's that been?
You're coming through fine for me. Yeah.
Oh no, this is a really long delay. We can't even fix this in post, by the way. Okay, all right. I will probably make an executive decision on this, and Dom, let you chat to Mark on email a little bit more. And while I'll quickly skip on. We want Mark on so badly. Just need to sometimes just a browser refresh fixes it, and the software that we use. I've gone to this like long delay thing. I just do a control refresh or whatever, and it comes back. So let me quickly run you through the European situation over here, which is fascinating. The split that's happening because over here in Europe, Hyundai Genesis said that they are leaning really into EVs. So there's some regulatory benefits to doing that as well and selling some electric cars. Like I say, 41 new and used ones, which is going to be fast because that's by 2030. I don't know whether it's the beginning or the end of 2030, but heck, if we give them a little bit of leeway, it's still really ambitious. Last year in 2025, Hyundai and Genesis, I don't know whether it's joint or maybe just Hyundai, sold 116,000 vehicles. They want to sell 420,000 electric vehicles by 2030. So not quite a fourfold, but, you know, a really big increase. Mass production of the IONIQ 3 has already begun at Hyundai's Motor Turkey İzmit factory on the 14th of August. And there's another small electric SUV coming over here. Got a mid-size SUV coming soon as well. And, you know, Europe is very competitive for pure BEV. They talked about reducing their battery costs for the next-gen EVs. They reduced them by 30%. Just to clarify that's not the cars on the road now. Hyundai's 30% battery reduction figure applies to the new model year, 2027 ones coming, you would think with the new Genesis as well. They use what's called a mid-nickel NCM cell. Planned savings for forthcoming models are, you know, just around the corner. They also reduce the charging time by 40% on those. Plus, they have a new platform, moving away from EGMP. And so those cells will also go into the EREVs as well. That is a targeted answer, I think, very much to the US and China. I don't think we're going to see any EREVs on sale over here in Europe. Dom, I know that you are still on your travels in Europe. What have you made of... we might just get Mark on audio only, by the way, and not have his picture, be a shame, but if we can have him on, that'd be better than not having Mark. Dom, what's your impression of the Hyundai news from that perspective of being in Europe right now?
I'm not sure if Europe's such a different market from America and China, I guess. I mean, here, as you know, the EVs tend to be, you know, shorter range generally anyway. I don't see a whole lot of plug-in hybrids. I know there are lots, especially up in Germany, which is a bigger country. I think people do longer distances there. But I feel like EREVs is not really as much a factor here, especially with upcoming regulation to kind of just curtail all combustion vehicles anyway. So I mean, an EREV is basically still has that combustion component. So I'm not sure if it completely rules out that through the legislation exactly. But yeah, I think Europe's really going to be more of a strong EV only, pure EV kind of situation here. And I'd like to hear from Mark about this actually, about the China scene, because you know EVs were kind of big there, and they're still producing them. Like if we're talking about Hyundai, they just debuted the Hyundai V in China, and I believe they're going to make a plug-in version of that as well. But I don't know if that's going to have the same if. Yeah, I'm wondering if the trajectory of EVs is going to be the same in China as it has been, or if it's because I feel like it's going to decline. Because I've like Tom was saying, it's kind of like training wheels, or it's like a psychological bridge to pure EV. Because a lot of people here we've seen with plug-in hybrids, once they have a plug-in hybrid, they kind of a lot of especially early adopters were really trying to maximize EV use, and then after doing that for a few months or years or whatever, they realize their next car is going to be an EV because they don't really need the gas engine, and especially now with the influx of so much charging infrastructure and other things. I don't know. So can we try Mark to see if he can?
We'll try, and we're just audio only, which to the audio listeners makes no difference. But hey, Mark, are you there? No. It's just a really, really long delay. It's like talking to one of your friends around the world on,
right,
Zoom 15 years ago. Oh, no. Oh, Tom, you're muted. Oh.
Yeah, it's a mess today. So yeah, but we've had people on from China. I've interviewed people from China before. Yeah. It's just this specific connection isn't good where he is.
Yeah. Oh man. Okay. We could hear and see Mark a little while ago on a long delay, but even without the pictures, we can't hear Mark, which is a shame. He says he can hear us. We just can't hear him. Which is really unfortunate. But okay, we'll move on, I think, and apologize profusely to Mark, and definitely have Mark on. Hopefully, maybe the connection comes back. I'll let you, Dom, just sort Mark on chat or email. Yeah. So from over here, from Hyundai's perspective, they've got a lot of smaller cars on offer, and I think it's just a simpler thing to do over in Europe, because the distances are lower, and you just don't need to do massive road trips at a time. So it's an easier sell. As Tom says, when you're selling to the US, which is added extremes, some massive urban areas where people don't even have their own mobility, because shared mobility is robust enough and you can jump in an Uber or a Waymo or whatever, through to the other scale where there is still a dearth of fast EV charging, because there's actually just a lot of nothing in parts of America. And so to have a coherent strategy that fits all of the US, let alone North America, is really, really difficult. And so that's where people go, yeah, but what if? Yeah, but what if I want to do my annual road trip? And yeah, but what if? And you can be flippant and say just hire a car that one time, which is my reply to everyone, but people they buy a car and it's so personal, isn't it? And so I've just realized I have my old branding on. I threw this on this morning. How embarrassing. Ignore this. I'll do the show like this. And so I see from the US perspective, going EREV does, don't do it, just make me smaller,
blow it up.
Does I also got an email this week. No, it was a comment. It was a comment on the Spotify feed of EV News. And I'm really rubbish at checking the Spotify comments. But from someone said, hey, stop mentioning hybrids and you'll get yourself a new Patreon supporter. And I was like, okay, it's fine. I know he meant it like nicely, or not maybe. But yeah, that's also people's take as well. Like some people get really upset at any talk of hybrids and EREVs and burning things and whatnot. But yeah, it's really it's really tough. It does seem like a sensible place to start. Just a big vehicle like the Santa Fe going E-Rev, there's loads of room for it. Of course, the big launch that we had, which was the thumbnail on last week's podcast, the Genesis GV90, whenever that was revealed, you know, lots of people went, wow, well, that's a very traditional shape. There would be room, if you got rid of some frunk space, for an engine. So I think that would be, you know, not a no-brainer, but I think that would definitely, you know, suit that vehicle, which is a large, expensive, 100,000-plus vehicle. Some people just, I don't know, want the reassurance. Let's try one final time. Let's put Mark on the stage. Try one final time. Mark, are you there? Oh, no. That would be a shame not to have Mark.
It just doesn't seem like it's working.
Doesn't seem like it's going to happen this week. Hussein's actually at home for today for this show. So I'm glad he hasn't gone all out of his way. But we still really appreciate it because of the time difference. But yeah, we're not getting Mark on this one. You know what we might do? We might do a pre-record with Mark and then bring that to you, because we used to record this. And then we went back live and we'll take the highs with the lows on this. Right, before we move off of Hyundai and their big announcements this week, anything else that we haven't touched on? I guess just the growth of the confidence, I think, of the Koreans in the US. That might be where we finish off. Tom, how do you think that compares with, because they've made such big inroads over the last couple of decades, how does that compare with what's coming out of Detroit at the moment?
Yeah, that, why wouldn't they be confident? I mean, you know, like the Hyundai Kia duo came out of nowhere in the 80s, and look at where they are now here. You know, they did what Toyota, Honda, Nissan did in the 70s. You know, they went from being kind of a joke, which, to be honest with you, in the early 80s, the Hyundai, the cars that were coming from Korea were kind of a joke. They were like disposable cars. You know, the Hyundai Excel, you could buy for like, I think it was $39.99 back then. It was like a $4,000 brand new car. But it lasted for like 4 or 5 years, and it literally fell apart. I remember seeing them like on the side of the road, bumpers dragging on the ground. And, you know, they were junk. But they were cheap, and people that could never afford a new car could buy a new car. It was $4,000. But where they've gone from there to now is amazing. The quality is tremendous. They have matched, and they're on par with their Japanese counterparts, with the Hondas, Toyotas, Nissan, Subarus. The quality is the same as far as I'm concerned. So, they've come a long way, Martin, for sure. And one last thing on the EREV topic that we didn't discuss, that I think people underestimate when you haven't been involved with electric vehicles yet, is the maintenance end of it, and the fact that it's so much easier to own an EV. There's no regular maintenance, and you almost can't explain that to somebody who owns a gas car, because, or who has never owned an EV, because they're just so used to it in their life. You know, they've been driving 20, 30, 40 years with a combustion vehicle, and they know that the usual maintenance and so forth. But with the EVs, it's so great that you just, I mean, it's tires and wiper blades. And of course, things can break, and you need, you know, to take it to the dealer to repair something that isn't functioning right. But there's no regular maintenance. And for instance, you guys know I got my dad in the Bolt now for 2 years. And that's one of the things that he loves. He's like, I just love that I just pull in the garage and plug it in, and that's all I have to do. Like, there's nothing else I need to do with this car. And he was the guy that religiously changed his oil every 3,000 miles, even though today's engines, you could probably go to 5,000 or so, or, you know, but he loves just not relying on service and maintenance people at all anymore. Just not even going to a gas station. He doesn't have to take the car to anyone. He just plugs it in his garage, refuels it while he's sleeping or watching TV, and never has to do anything. And with how easy he drives, the damn tires will last like 100,000 miles. So, you know, it's wiper blades for him. So I think that's one of the things. You still need to do that with EREVs. albeit less. The maintenance is going to be a little bit less because the engine isn't going to get worked as much. But you still have the engine there. You still have the complexity, the parts that wear themselves out. And, you know, it's not it might even end up requiring more maintenance because we all know combustion engines don't like to sit. They like to be worked. They like to have the oil and everything moving through the parts and everything. And if you use it so infrequently, that could end up to down the road even more problems sooner than what a the engine would have needed if it was used regularly, if that makes any sense. But I'm just speculating on that. But yeah, there's a lot of reasons why I don't recommend EREVs or plug-in hybrids unless the person's use case commands it. And yeah, some people do.
I was still, so there's a real nuance around EREVs. And the answer that I've settled on is that if you absolutely want the reassurance of an engine and you are financing that vehicle from new, then you should do it. And I know that upsets people who tune in just for the pure BEV news. And I'm sorry about that. But I think if you are the first owner, maybe the second, of that vehicle and you are perhaps leasing it and you just want it, just buy it, because they're going to have a big enough battery that you're going to do all of your miles on electric. You're never going to burn anything, and then you'll go, I didn't need it. What I wouldn't want to be is an EREV owner in the year 2035 that was sold to you now. I don't want to own a 10-year-old EREV. So I think they're a terrible idea, because all the great things, like Tom just said, about his dad and about maintenance, are then going to bite you on the bum. And I just think their values are going to have to go through the floor. Because if you are in the market for a 10-year-old car, and that's where your budget is, what are you going to do? You're going to buy a car that's got two things to go wrong with it. Either a big old battery, or all the oily bits, or just one of the other. So that you'll either just buy a petrol car, or you'll buy a pure BEV. And I think when EREVs work their way down the chain, they're still really new, a couple of years old in China, I think that is just a time bomb. And that's where I've settled. And then the other interesting thing is you try and read the tea leaves of the kind of people who, you know, who know about these things. And there's the story this week of Marte Rimatz, of course, the man who invented the supercar that blew away all the hypercars. And then he's now the CEO of Bugatti and Porsche, exiting that and selling to private equity, I think it was, and coming out of that. But either way, he now makes combustion cars. And so you have to listen to Marte Rimatz, because although he's now doing production stuff, and so yeah, he's making a new, something like a 16-cylinder, the hypercar, whatever. And this was his take. For normal cars, normal people, the vast majority will be electric, he said this week. The upper segment, like sports cars and upwards, are going to stay combustion for a very long time, exactly like watches. 5% of watches are made in Switzerland, but that's where 90% of profits are made. An Apple Watch or any kind of smartwatch can do so many more things, but no one will pay 200 grand for it. And that's kind of where I read that and was like, yes, exactly. If you are a normal person buying a normal car, just buy a pure BEV. And if you really have the money to argue about it, go and buy a beautiful piece of handcrafted art with cylinders and oil that goes up and down and pumps and pulleys, because it's engineering beauty. But if you're going to go get some bread and milk, just drive a BEV. So I think that's kind of where I've settled. And I'm not going to argue with Marte Rimatz, because he's a legend and he knows what he's talking about. So there you go. That was the news this week. All right, we should probably move on. How are we doing for time? Yeah, let's move on. Tom, you sat down this week with the CEO of EVgo. Despite being a long-established network, we haven't talked about it as much as maybe newcomers on the podcast. What are they doing in terms of raising their profile and attracting more customers to expand their footprint as well?
Yeah, so I did go to EVgo's new innovation lab in El Segundo, California. If you remember last year, I kind of did a little mini tour where I visited the engineering labs of IANA and Electrify America, and I had intended on doing EVgo, but they were just opening up a new lab. They were building out a new innovation lab in California. So they said, you'll be the first one in here. We're going to open like in January. We'll get you in. We'll get the CEO to fly out and meet him and everything. And of course, the day we had scheduled, I had tickets booked and everything, was the day we had that major snowstorm and I made the snowblower video. Remember? So that got canceled. Then we had to arrange when we could get him, because he lives in, he comes from Northeast, like Massachusetts or something. So we had to arrange when Badar Akan, their CEO of EVO, could get out to California, when some of their other executives could be there, when I could be there, and it was in July. So yeah, I sat down, I walked through their facility, sat down with Badar. I actually have the second part of this video series going live right after this podcast, and that's my interview with some of the other employees as I was in their innovation labs. This is just the Badar CEO, Badar Khan interview, the one that I posted 2 days ago. So yeah, asked him a bunch of questions. The one thing that I am regretful for, a little disappointed in, was you remember EVgo announced that they're going to start using Tesla superchargers in their mix of equipment. It was just like 2 weeks ago. I was literally out there like 3 days before they made that announcement, and they didn't tell me. So I could have weaved that into the interviews, and I was really put off by it. And I messaged them, and I was like, how did you not tell me this? You know, like, well, it was all under embargo, and, you know, yeah, everything I said there was under embargo.
Like, yeah, you're a journalist. So, your whole life is embargoes.
I was really disappointed in that. And I mean, that's why, that's part of the reason why these videos got held up, because I was going to publish them like two weeks ago. But I was a little pissed. I'll tell you that right now. Sorry for my French, but I was like, what the hell? How do you not tell me that? Because we talked about equipment. We talked about their next generation of chargers, which they are developing in-house. They announced this like a year and a half ago, where they partnered with Delta, and they're making their own DC fast charger that, you know, only they have. It's not a commodity. They're not buying from anyone else. And that was like everything what I talked to them. That was kind of like their central thing for the EVgo of the future, was going to be our own in-house. We've learned lessons on our previous generation chargers that and they've bought chargers from everyone. Every single equipment manufacturer has had equipment on the EVgo network at some point or another. And we learned what we needed, you know, for this and that. So, and it's interesting. I got to see it. I couldn't take pictures of it, but it's really a strange looking DC fast charger. It doesn't look like anything you've seen before. So the form factor is really unique. The best way I could describe it, and I describe it in the video I'm posting today, is it looks like a giant electric toothbrush. Like, it's cylindrical and it comes up and then it gets smaller. And like, you know, just picture an electric toothbrush, 8 feet tall, put it in the parking lot with a cable coming off the top of it, you know? So it's cool. It's a cool form factor.
Real quick, Tom.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to talk about the power levels it has yet, or is that
no future? They didn't give me that level of details, but it will be higher power than what they offer today.
So
mean, that was kind of like this is the future of EVgo. You know, we've learned a lot, and then boom, 3-4 days later, we're going to start buying superchargers. So I do think that the superchargers are going to be a small percentage of their sites moving forward. I think it's a way for them to very quickly upgrade their equipment. Because, see, one of the interesting things about EVgo, guys, is, and I think a lot of people don't realize this, they are the oldest continuously operating DC fast charging network in the U.S. They had the first public DC fast charger in the ground. It was April 11th, 2010. I know, because I wrote an article about it back then in 2010. And PGE, Pacific General Electric, Portland General Electric in Portland, Oregon, they actually installed the first DC fast charger in the country about 6 months before that, in late 2010. But it was on their like private property. It wasn't like public. It was like a demonstration thing. So little DC fast charge history. So EVgo is the earliest. Blink was a business back then. The Ecotality thing that they had to they got like a $100 million contract. But they installed their first DC fast chargers on the Blink network or Equitality about 6 months after EVgo. So they, I'm just putting the context out there that, you know, there's advantages to being first and there's a lot of disadvantages. The EVgo network has a lot of aging equipment out there, Martin. You know, because they've been, they've had DC fast chargers in the ground for 16, 15 years now. So the part of what I wanted to get out of Badar was like, how quickly are we going to get, there's still some really old equipment out there. And so they are upgrading it all with the newer equipment. A lot of the Tesla superchargers, I think, are going to probably end up, because they're, it's a very quick, easy swap out on some of their older sites. They also have a program called Renew. And they've been, the last 2 years or so, they've been updating 100 DC fast chargers a year. Now, it's not a breakneck speed, but it is two a week. And that's not sites, that's chargers. So they've been upgrading their chargers. They currently have around 5,000 DC fast chargers in the ground. They plan on having all of them upgraded within like a year or two to all newer. It'll be all the new equipment. They're at a pace now to install 1,500 DC fast chargers in this year in 2026. Now, to put that in context, only in 2022, EVgo's entire network was only about 3,000 DC fast chargers. So 4 years ago, they've gone from 3,000 to 5,000. And now moving forward, they plan on installing 3,000 to 5,000 per year starting next year.
So expensive,
so,
though.
So wow. By the end of this decade, EVgo should have a completely new network. All of the chargers should be within a couple of years old, and they could have about 15,000 plugs, all high-powered new equipment. Now, one of the things that Barry W. points out, EVgo was early because it was a punishment network. That's not true, Barry. EVgo started and formed 8 months before NRG had the problem where they were ordered to spend money. Right. So they were in the process of already built, planning to build out a network. Now the money that Energy was ordered to put into, you know, DC fast charge network, or that wasn't the exact wording, but what they used it for, that just gave them a boost. But they were already going. It wasn't like Electrify America that started because of the punishment. They were already a business operating, planning on installing DC fast charging network. But most people hadn't heard of them at the time, and that it made the news that Energy was fine. It was all part of that whole Enron scandal back then.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So most people think it started out of that. I actually believed it started out of that for a while too. But after doing some digging, I learned that's not the case. They were a business. Energy started that division of the company to install charging infrastructure. And it wasn't just DC fast charging infrastructure. They were going to offer a suite of products like home charging, and there was going to be a subscription fee at first. Like, you would subscribe to this network, and for that, you would get a home charger. You'd be able to charge on their public network. Like, this was going back to when we didn't know how we were going to charge vehicles. You know, what was going to be the business model? Was it, you know, and they were going to offer a subscription service. So in any event. So I talked to Badar, and I asked him a bunch of questions, learned about upgrading equipment, the transition to NACS plugs, which is super important. You know, we talked a little bit about pricing. I'd like to have talked more about pricing, but I didn't want to push them too hard. You know, I try to be respectful when people give me interviews, but that's one of the biggest things that people complain about EVgo is their prices are generally a little bit more than competing networks in the area. And I talk more about that in the video that I'm posting today. At the end, I talk a little bit about what I would recommend EVgo do in the future, because now they have some serious competition, Martin. They really didn't over the years. Mm-hmm. There really wasn't a lot of DC fast charging. I mean, electrifying, well, when Tesla started, that's one thing, but I always put them in a different bucket because, you know, the Tesla owners are going to use superchargers, but everybody else that couldn't use superchargers, they had EVgo. And then when Electrify America started, they started getting some pressure. But now this is pressure like they've never had before. This is you know, with IANA and Walmart and Electrify America and the other networks, they have to get things right. It appears as though, and I talked to a lot of people in the company, they understand what they need to do moving forward, and you know, we'll see what happens.
Look, whenever I talk to the CEO of a CPO, I always sit there, and after I've asked them, answer my question, ask them, and they're answering, just quietly in my mind think, you have such a hard job to do. Like, it's no one's ever going to be happy. DC fast charging will never be cheap enough. It'll never be reliable enough. It will never be in the right places. And it's fabulously expensive, and there's no guarantee on return. You can go start a business, make a widget, cost you a dollar, sell it for two, you've made some profit. Charging networks are a horrible business. And so anyone that's giving it a go, I mean, I support them, because it is far from certain how you're going to make that turn a profit. But there you go. funny enough, I see in the comments, Lord Darkside says, I'm happy that BYD are now entering our market here in Bulgaria, which is interesting because talking about charging, there's a big charging story in China. They've now got 10,000 of their flash chargers in the ground. They want 20,000 by the end of the year. And so they've got four more months to do that, so they've actually got to do a bigger second half of the year, because then it started in earlier this year. But it's still just incredible. They want to get 20,000 of these things. One of the criticisms has been from people who have thought about this is, you know, surely when you charge a car quickly, it generates heat. There's thermal management to worry about, and you're going to fry the battery at 1.5 megawatts, 1,500 kilowatts of power. So we were chatting on our WhatsApp group this week, trying to get our heads around this story, which was, so BYD took their Yangwang brand and absolutely blitzed it on a fast charger. So what they did was they took the U7, which is a very good looking sedan there, and they drove it for 30,000 kilometers nonstop and 16, 17,000 miles equivalent. They did it in less than 9 days, didn't stop driving the thing. There wasn't, you know what I'd love? I'd love them to release all the data. I know if we had Kyle on the show this week, he'd be like, just tell us the data. But we were chatting with Dom, we were trying to work out the math of this, because 350 charges in 9 days is once every 38 minutes or something. And so we were trying to work out that they drove this at 150 mile an hour constant. So whether I think it was either on a track or a, you know, private area, whatever. So that in itself generates heat. And then they were stopping and charging it. Now, there is, So this is the Yangwang U7. Not to throw anyone under the bus here, and our fine colleagues of the website I'm showing you, they say it charges 10 to 97 in 9 minutes. It doesn't. Because that is the flash charging technology claim. This was the first one in China to get the new blade battery too. So this car charges at 640 kilowatts peak. And I don't know what the charge curve is on this. I've not seen any. When we have Mark on next week, he can tell us if he's had a charge test on this. But it charges at 640. So there's two different things that get confused with this. So there's the flash charging technology, which is 1.5 megawatts, which is the 9 minutes to 97%. And then there is the actual batteries that go in the cars. And this particular pack is 150 kilowatt hours, and it'll take at 640. And it sounds like I'm complaining about 640 kilowatts not being enough. How could this possibly not be enough? So we were trying to work out, weren't we? Like, did they run it at like 5% state of charge, charge it to maybe 30%, go and drive for 35 minutes at 150 miles an hour, and then flash charge it to ride the wave of the fastest speeds. Either way, as our friend Patrick in front of BYD's megawatt charging. So what they were doing here was proving that it's safe. So at the end of this 30,000 kilometers, they then tested the battery deg, and 30,000 kilometers of driving, 16,000 miles, had done 1.3% state of health degradation, and 350 flash charges. Have I got that right,
Dom?
That's
significant. That sounds about right, I believe. Yeah, 350 charges. That's which I think most people wouldn't charge that much in several years, really. You know, I'm not sure how deep they went every time. But like you were saying, we don't know, you know, what exactly the envelope was for that charging sessions, all those sessions. But I think that's like several years of charging for most people, and then that's also, you know, like huge power, and also while the car has been being stressed. I think that 150 mile an hour thing, that was part of, didn't they do like an endurance, have a whole endurance test? So I feel like this is like the, just like the battery data from that whole other kind of thing coming out now, but maybe I might have that wrong. I'm not sure. Yeah. But yeah, it just, it all bodes well though for the Blade 2 batteries, right? Huge.
That's such little degradation, like 1.3% deg. After that much.
Yeah.
All right, I'll take it. No worries.
Yeah, I think we see a lot of cars now.
Age does have a lot to do with it. Yeah, it's true, also. Tom. Sure. You know, it's not just simply charging. But yeah, I'll take that. I mean, and the good thing about it is, like you talked about, it, you know, for them to charge that much, that many times, it must have been a very short charging session, you know, from a low state of charge to, you know, 30% or whatever, as Martin said, to ride
like
the curve.
5 minutes.
Right. So that makes it even more, that makes it even better, because that's when the vehicle is going to charge at its highest charging rate. So, you know, they abused it as much as they can. You know, they probably said, okay, as soon as it starts slowing down the charging rate, unplug it, you know, because we want to just show constant driving and charging at its the highest rate that it accepts.
It's insane. And I know why they did it, because they've pushed back on the claims from social media. There's a famous case that's currently in court there, because there's a famous social media content creator with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of followers that are making claims about the heat generated, you know, putting temperature, you know, getting one of their cars, tearing it down, putting temperature probes on it, saying it gets too hot. And we've seen this. And the car companies don't tend to tolerate anything that's not true too well. We saw that with Xiaomi as well, when claims were made about their safety and door handles and crashes and the power goes out and things like that. And they push back really hard on it, because there's a lot at stake. I saw a story this week that thinks Xiaomi's new, maybe it was the Sky Nomad or the E-Rev they're releasing, or one of their cars. They opened the tailgate and attached some tow ropes to the seat rails and towed a tank or something. It was just another video that catches your eye that was all safety based. And again, that's because that's what they're fighting, is this, you know, and this is, but to come back to BYD and Yangwang, this is what they're fighting, which is the claims that, well, it's clever technology, but you're going to ruin the battery. And they were saying, well, no, it wasn't. So, hey, if anyone from BYD is watching, dump us the data, dump us a spreadsheet, we'll go through it, because we'd love to know how long was each stint, when did you charge, when did you unplug. They won't do that, because that's the secret sauce. But we'd love to know it, because we were trying to work it out. Like, 9 days divided by 350, like 39 charges a day.
So Greg Kramer in the comments.
Has he done the math for us?
Says, is 51.5 miles every 51.5 miles they charge, which I think it sounds like what I had as well. I'd seen somewhere as well.
Okay. So they were driving at 150 miles an hour, so they were stopping every, oh no, 20 minutes?
I think it was 20 minutes. I think it was around 18, 20 minutes or something, yeah.
Okay, right.
How many drivers did they have?
Yeah, like just nonstop. But we're talking about it, so it's done its job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of us saying, wow, like 1.3% degradation is crazy. So what I do, so I have a spin-off podcast called EV News China. I do it Monday to Friday. And thank you. So I'm glad you're the one person that thinks so. My pitch for that is explaining the world's biggest EV market to the global listener. So I'm just trying to decode what happens in the East for the West. And so I've just got in the habit now of, I just now just screenshot everything on the Chinese websites and just give it to AI and say, what does this say? Because there's so much reporting in Western media that I think, how do I fact check that? And, you know, I'm sure BYD aren't going to give us all the data, but absolutely, like, we are genuinely interested. This is an amazing test that they've done. And I'd hate for the language barrier to be a reason for us not to be, you know, genuine about these things. So I just take screenshots of all these pages now. I give it to ChatGPT or Claude and say, what does this say? And I try and go back to first party sources as well, and always say, like, the manufacturer says this, and That's a fascinating thing to be reporting on. I've scratched just barely the surface of it, which is super interesting. How are we doing for time this week? Oh, we're doing good.
I'd like to grab this comment here. EVs of America posted, did you see the guys, the guy who charged at EVgo station was charged over $400. It was in a Hyundai dealer using a charge point equipment. That was yesterday. I think that came out in the news. It actually got a lot of traction. And I'm a little disappointed because if you remember, this is exactly what I wanted to do. I had talked a couple months ago about going to this DC fast charger was super expensive and paying for it and making a video explaining, you know, how you have to know where you're going. I did. I went to that place. It was going to cost me $2,200 to charge my Lightning. And I was going to pay it just to make this video because it's $25 per kilowatt hour, I think, during peak hours. But when I went there, the dealership had changed it where it was a private thing. It was listed on the ChargePoint app as, you know, open to the public and $25 a kilowatt hour. But any event, this place charged $5 per kilowatt hour. And EVgo, while they do a lot of things that needs correcting and their prices are expensive, is not to blame for this. They got a black eye for something that they really shouldn't have. It's a roaming partner for EVgo. If you understand what roaming means, is you can use your EVgo app to charge on other networks' chargers, so you don't have to have multiple apps. In this case, this was a ChargePoint charger that was installed at a dealership. The dealerships are notorious for charging a lot of money because they don't want you using their chargers. And in many instances, they got the chargers installed using public funds. So in order to qualify for getting subsidies, you have to have the chargers open to the public. So their way around that is, sure, we'll open to the public. We'll charge them $10 a kilowatt hour. No one's going to use it. And it'll be our own private charger to use for our, to recharge our cars. They can swipe their own card that they have, which has no fee, and they don't pay anything. So anyway, this guy went there, paid over $400. He used his EVgo app to pay for it. But EVgo didn't set the rate. EVgo doesn't, you know, charge them the money. It's the dealership doing it. But EVgo had to explain, because of course this news station called EVgo, because the guy said, I charged at EVgo. And, even the EV owner doesn't really understand how it works. They're just a roaming partner, and EVgo includes it on their map, so to make it convenient. But EVgo doesn't get any money for that. So in any event, that was yesterday in the news. It made a lot of news. And, the dealership is stupid, EVs of America. I agree that. I think it's a terrible policy when dealerships charge so much. They should just make the charger not available to the public if they want to, if they don't want other people to use it. But they should make it available to the public and charge a decent rate. It's good community service almost. And you also get a captured customer on your lot for a half an hour or 40 minutes or whatever. And that person, not everyone, but maybe one out of every 20, might be interested in getting a car at some point soon and might walk around and say, wow, that's actually pretty nice. So I always thought it was a missed opportunity when the dealerships do this, but a lot of them do it. A lot of them that install DC fast chargers charge a ton of money, and it's just not worth stopping there.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say the other story, which it even crossed over to my news here, and I couldn't work out how to tackle it, so I actually didn't tackle the story. And this was a California driver. I think her name was Linda. I think she's a Californian food content creator influencer, and she plugged in her Rivian and charged to 100% while she was charging up. I'll get the actual details. So she was at Costco. And so she posted this on TikTok. That's her TikTok there. She seems like a lovely lady. And the cost was, let me find it here, $62.89, I think was the cost or something. And so, right, this made the news everywhere. Not everywhere, but it really spread far and wide on US media. And I thought, how do I tackle this on my podcast, The EV News? And in the end, I didn't. There's a couple of reasons for that. Firstly, there's no way really of me doing this without mansplaining to a young lady who is on screen with her TikTok account. So for that simple reason, I was like, well, I can't even push back on this without just coming across as an ass, right? But on the other hand,
you charged
your Rivian at a public charge and it cost you $60. Then you made a TikTok and a bunch of mainstream media picked up and it went, EVs are expensive to charge. It's not that expensive compared
to... But she wasn't lying, Martin.
But
it was true. It can be more expensive than gas.
Why are people outraged on the internet so much? Why is she so outraged? It's just what it costs. Look at the price.
It's like rage bait right now because she's not a new EV owner. This is her second EV. She knows the deal, and it's just I felt like it was a way of just getting a lot of views on her video because people love
and
outrage and
But it's true. That's the thing. There is an element of truth to this. Even if she did on purpose just to get clicks and just to be in the news, whatever, it is true. And that goes back to the point of me wanting to make a video on this that kind of explains how this all works and how you do. It is unfortunate that you do kind of have to be smart with charging unless you just do what like a lot of Tesla owners do and say, I only trust Tesla. I just go to Tesla superchargers. That's not the right answer. But it is an answer, and that's part of this the difficulty of transitioning from gas to EVs. With gas, you can pay more from gas station to gas station. Sometimes even a dollar more. There's some outrageous gas station prices. But with EVs, it's even more uneven. You can go from paying 39 cents a kilowatt hour at an Iona station or something like that, you can drive right up the road. You could pay like 80 cents a kilowatt hour at some guy's private charge point station. So I still fully intend on making a video about this. I just don't know what the right approach is for me to start. I thought a great way to get a bunch of attention on eyes on my video first was to be to charge at this charger and pay like $2,000 because that would have been in the news. You think the post story, you think this girl story with $90 or whatever it was in the news. How about, EV owner pays $2,200 to charge car. And I just wanted that to get the eyes on my video. And then I go into explaining, look, I only did this to prove a point. Yes, you can pay that. But if you just have half a brain and figure this out, you won't, and it'll be much less than gas. But the problem is, it's true. If you don't understand how this works, you get an EV as a car rental, which I don't recommend. I know I'll get thrashed in the comment section again.
You shouldn't.
If you don't own an EV, do not rent one. Period. Yeah. Do not rent an EV. If you just rent one and you don't know what you're doing and you're on a vacation or something, you'll plug in wherever the app tells you, whatever, and it could be outrageous. So anyway, we need more education on this topic of what DC fast charging costs.
Martin. But I just wanted to mention that one quick thing that this kind of underlines is the importance of home charging and the people and the importance of people who live in apartments or other places where they can't charge at their home, getting affordable level two charging somehow, like in a street on the street or in their building's parking area or whatever, because home charging is like 1/4 or 1/6 or 1/8 of the public DC fast charging places. And it's just charging needs to be more equitable across the board because the people who can least afford those kind of high prices are maybe the people who live in apartment buildings and not single dwelling buildings out in the suburbs. And so I think it really brings up that point as well that should be made.
Yeah, you're right, Dom. It was a report came out this week from the US that if you rent your home or you live in multi apartment dwelling, you can pay up to 6 times more to charge your EV, but partly because you have to use public charging, partly because other people set your pricing if you are charging on level 2, but they've set the prices or you're forced to use DC fast charging. It's simply unfair. They call it the renter's tax. And it's not fair. And that does need sorting. Good shout, actually. We are back live again. Thank you very much to Jamie Bell, who pointed that out and said, wow, you're live again. Yeah, we did. We tried recording it, the podcast, for a few weeks. We're not back to where we were. We used to get about 500 people tuning in live every week, and I can see you're about 250 this week. So, yeah, we've absolutely, you know, not the replay, because I think last week's video got about 10,000 views on the Genesis GB90 or almost that, which is small fry compared to what Tom gets for his videos. But it's good for this podcast. And yeah, we're not back to where we were. So, yeah, tell your friends. Not that they care, but tell your friends. We're back live again. Set a mental date in your diary. Come and join in the comments as well. So we tried it recorded for, you know, various reasons to schedules and stuff, and we miss you guys in the comments. So right, we'll finish off with a couple more stories. Dom, Cybertruck got more expensive this week. What happened, Dom?
It looks like the cheapest Cybertruck now starts at $74,990. That's up $5,000 from a few days ago, and it's like in $15,000 more than like the original $59,990 price tag that Tesla briefly offered in February. I'm not sure if it's the exact same build, but it's just kind of weird that, you know, because the Cybertruck is not selling like it had been expected, of course, so they have a lot of capacity in their factory, and I'm not sure raising the price is going to do anything to solve that. I'm not sure why they're charging more, but it's selling better than all the other electric pickup trucks out there at the moment. Unless you take, like, so the Silverado EV and the GMC Sierra EV are basically, you know, kind of the same truck with a different facelift and a few different features and interiors and such. But, together, I think in the second quarter of this year, they've actually outsold, you know, the overall Cybertruck. But it's still, you know, there's still not big, huge numbers. In the first half of the year, a Cybertruck sold 7,263. That's not a very big number when we talk about, you know, making cars and trucks. Trucks are, you know, they sell like a million Ford F-150s every year or something like that, right? So
what was it, 7,000 Cybertrucks?
We're looking at 2,800 Rivian R1Ts for the first half of the year. That's not enough. That's not a very big number, you know. Is that, and why Rivian's obviously moving to a higher, you know, a bigger, what do you call it? Bigger selling vehicle with the R2, but 3,672 Silverado EV is 3,000. Actually, the GMC Sierra EV has really picked up in the. Usually, they've been a bit slower selling than the Silverado version, but I feel like it's a nicer truck. Maybe it has a slightly higher price point, but 3,000 of those in the first half of the year, those aren't huge numbers, you know. And especially with the end of the CAFE, you know, credits and things like that. So manufacturers were incentivized to, you know, build these lower selling vehicles in the past because they were, you know, offsetting credits that would have to be paying to Tesla or other EV makers, right? So it was helping them a lot more, and it was giving them a lot more incentive to keep on building these trucks. Now, depending on what happens over the next, you know, election cycle or two, those regulations could come back in. And so I'm not sure if, it's going to be interesting to see if like GM, you know, hangs tough with the Silverado and in this Sierra and keeps making them, because, you know, if they stop making them, then they have to, you know, they have this credit situation come back up again, and where it makes sense to, you know, build and even sell them at in low volume vehicle like that. I don't know, it's just an interesting situation to watch, see how that turns out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and I think I could be wrong, we need to check this out. I think the Lightning is still the number one selling electric truck if you cumulative sales, not current sales.
Yeah,
I think Ford sold more Lightning than GM has sold of either of their trucks, or the Tesla has sold Cybertruck. So I still haven't fully forgiven Ford for discontinuing the Lightning, but I am hosting a Ford EV event coming up in September 12th. We talked about this. You can, if you drive a Mustang Mach-E or Ford F-150 Lightning, come on out. We're going to have an event at a local farm. Ford's coming. They're going to bring probably some engineers. We're going to give away some gifts. We're all going to hang out, talk EVs. This is an annual event. It keeps getting bigger and bigger. And what I'm probably going to do, it used to be just a Ford F-150 Lightning event. But this year, since Ford's not selling the Lightning anymore, we expanded it. We brought in that Mustang Mach-E. So we're going to have all the Lightnings parked on one side of the field, all the Mustang Mach-Es parked on another side of the field. And what I'm going to do also for the Lightning folks, because every year we did this just for Lightning, an hour before the this event starts at Allstead Farms in Chester, we're going to have a little bagel and coffee breakfast at my house for the F-150 Lightning folks. So there's going to be details on how you can sign up for that. Well, you can sign up to attend this main event right now. I dropped the link in the website, and Martin has it up here on the screen. I'm also going to post it on X. But then as far as the smaller pre-event, and then we're going to drive from my house over to the event in like a caravan. We're going to post that, how you do that over on the Ford EV Clubs group. The Ford EV Clubs website, you can look for that today and tomorrow. Today or tomorrow, I'll have the details on how you can come to that event, and my address will be there for people that sign up, and we're going to have a fun time. So that's two Saturdays from now, September 12th. Amazing. Come on out.
Yeah. I'm going to have some fun. Look forward to seeing all the coverage of that. Well, that probably rounds us out, and that's where we'll get to today. Thank you very much for joining us back on the live stream. Yeah, we are back here live on Friday morning, afternoon. It's, what is it now, 3 o'clock here in the UK? 4 o'clock for Dom. How's it? You're still in Italy, aren't you, Dom?
I am. This is my last week in Italy. I'll be in Crete next week, and hopefully in Greece. Hopefully the connection there is as good or hopefully better. We'll have to see. Yeah.
Wow. The world tour continues.
And hopefully we can have Mark. Mark said he might be able to join us next week from a different country. He'll be in a different country next week. So we're hoping that maybe we can have a segment with him next week as well and talk about some Chinese EVs from the perspective of somebody on the ground and reporting on them, you know, pretty much every day. He puts out a lot of content. And if you have it, we have his YouTube page up on our screen right now if you're just listening to on the radio. But he's got three videos, walkthroughs of the Chengdu Auto Show. It's not the biggest auto show, but let's say Beijing and Shanghai switch off every year. So this is the most important one for Western China. And it's also the one that sees more transactions, like people actually buying cars, whereas the other ones are more about showcasing brands and displaying concepts. So this is a very important show, and it's huge. So he's got three long videos, but he's amazing. The way he runs through these halls, practically running, and you know, gets into it like through the crowds and gets their shots in and spits facts and figures. Like it's like amazing to watch. I don't know how he does it. I don't know. It's like he's got to have like a script in one hand and the camera in the other. And it's just like a kind of amazing to watch. If you've ever done that kind of work before, it's yeah. And yeah, lots of great information to keep you up on what's going on in China. He does a lot of reviews as well. Aside from, you know, doing the walkthroughs of auto shows, he has, you know, great insights. He does all kinds of cars, not just EVs. So yeah.
Yeah. Have a check out those videos and subscribe to Mark's channel. And we'll get him on as soon as possible. There's so much we can to talk about from what's happening in China. But from the perspective of explaining it to the rest of us, there's no one better in the business to do that. So there you go. Right. All right. Good stuff. Should we call it a day? What do you reckon, Dom? How are we doing for time?
A day.
There you go. We'll call it
a day. Oh, yeah.
There we go. Enjoy your travels. Enjoy Crete. And when we see you. I love how the comments have just descended into politics. Is Dom coming back on January the 1st, 2029? Now, you got the midterms first, and it wasn't a rage quit anyway. No, No, that's not why. That's not why the world tour began. Because look, if it's good enough for the Rolling Stones and Taylor Swift, then it's good enough for Dominic Yoni, right? Fellow traveling musician. There we go. Didn't mean to compare you to either of those, by the way. But he doesn't mean shake it off. That's all I know from Taylor Swift. Thank you very much for watching or listening to us this week and joining us once again on the live stream. I think we're all good. All right.
Tom,
if you're listening to us and not watching, Tom just raged. He did his own rage quit. Just closed his browser. He's gone. He has. Tom's just left. He's just gone.
I wonder if I was moving my fingers. I don't have a mouse today, so I'm working on the pad on the laptop. So hopefully I didn't knock him out myself. I don't know. I'm out. Yeah.
Right, that's it. Let's go before he comes back quick. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you for listening. Hit subscribe, hit like on the video. It tells other people like you, like us. If they'll like what you're watching right now, they might like it too. Oh, you know what I'm saying? Hey, Dom, you know what to do. Say ciao.
Ciao.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.